Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. We have the usual gang here. It's been a while since we have had everyone together, so let's get right to it. Judge Eric Aspershlager.
Hello.
Hey, Judge Mac McIntyre.
Hi there.
And Judge Mike Rubino.
Why, hello.
Why, hello. So, little gang's together. So, let's get right into this thing. Eric, I want you to kind of politely inform us what you've been consuming your time with.
I don't know that I have a whole lot to divulge that's new. I mean, it's all kind of the usual suspects. Not the movie The Usual Suspects, although that's a good movie. But, yes. You know, the same kind of general stuff. So, I'm gonna use my brief time here just to give a shout-out to two video games upcoming that look really cool. I haven't played either of them. I don't know if they're going to be good, but they both look good. Right. One, Dave, I know that you're looking forward to, and Mac probably will be as well. Mike, too, maybe. But that would be the Arkham City game.
When is the release date for that?
I think it's sometime this fall. So.
Oh, really? Okay, it's not like a summer thing. Then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Well, they haven't said, but it's a ways out. So this is a follow-up to Arkham Asylum, very very excellent and very cool comic book-inspired Batman game from a couple of years ago now, I guess. And this one takes place in basically a walled-off portion of Gotham City that they're calling Arkham City, and the criminals are running the show, and there are a lot of cool villains and stuff. So that sounds like it's going to be really good.
Definitely.
And then the second one, Dave, have you heard anything about L.A. Noire?
I have been following it, not as closely. I know it's a Rockstar game. It seems like it's been in development for a long time. I think it was announced at an E3 like 3 years ago or something.
Yeah, right? I think it was initially announced as a PS3 exclusive. It's since it's coming out on both platforms. But it looked, I've never played a Rockstar game. They're the company that's known for Grand Theft Auto and
yep. Red Dead Redemption.
Yep. But this game looks like L.A. Confidential, the video game.
I mean, ooh, not bad. See, that's funny because for me, my L.A. Confidential, the video game would be like a side-scrolling beat-em-up starring Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce.
to be fair, Dave, I think any video game adaptation for you would be a side-scrolling
You are correct. You are guilty as charged. Check and mate.
which I think is why your design doc for the Schindler's List video game was just so tasteless.
It was really terrible. Oddly enough, The Fighter is a role-playing game for me, so weird.
but L.A. Noire, it's a story-based game. You play a detective in the 1940s in L.A., and you're kind of working your way through various various desks, like all various crime squads, so homicide and vice and all this kind of stuff. And it seems like it's going to be very story-based. A lot of it relies on you going to crime scenes, collecting evidence, talking to witnesses, and they developed this motion capture system. I forget, they have some fancy name for it, but basically they got all the actors, in costume and got them acting their parts out and shot them with a whole array of high definition cameras. And they're using that to it's a different kind of motion capture. I've seen in the trailers, it looks really, really good.
Yeah. Actually, I did see an article about that in like a Game Informer magazine. It's funny how, to bring this back to, which I'm sure this is the direction I know you're going into, but it is funny, isn't it, how, like, they're really employing a lot of this movie technology into video games
now?
We've come a long way from Mortal Kombat, the Mortal Kombat motion capture stuff, to what we're seeing now.
Which blew my mind back in the day.
That's right. Whoa, look at Johnny Cage. That's a real man. It looks like Johnny Cage.
I don't think parents would have been as outraged about the violence if they weren't so realistic.
Yeah, so real. Yeah. Look at that game now, and it's just like watching a live feed of an NBA game or something. It's just like people. It's like watching CNN,
But
something you're gonna buy, Eric?
Oh yeah, I think I'm definitely I think you're gonna get a pre-order in on that one because it looks like I say I'm not very interested in open world games and kind of I like a more kind of focused experience and story based stuff is pretty cool. It looks like this is gonna be very much in that vein, not a steal cars and shoot hookers type of thing. So
which is a lot more boring than it sounds, trust me.
Right. There's actually got some interesting actors involved. The main character is played by one of the actors from Mad Men who plays – who's the guy who wore the the kind of the horn-rimmed glasses who.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
like the guy who does the media and the TV and stuff.
I'm pretty sure it's him. Yeah, they got him to play the lead guy, and a lot of it has to do with interrogating suspects, and they've done such a good job apparently with the motion capture stuff that you can really read. Read people's faces and tells and stuff. So if they can pull it off, I think it's going to be a really cool game. So and very very kind of cinematic. Which
yes, yeah, that I know about. Right, I know.
So anyway, so that's not what I have.
So two potential purchases. I mean, I know like Arkham City will be mine on day one. I have no doubt about that. I mean,
yeah,
that was my vote for the best game of 2009 or whenever it came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a bunch of really cool looking games coming out that I'm already planning on buying, and those are among them. And L.A. Noir comes out in May, so it's not that far off.
Now, the real question I want to know is, are you going to pony up the money for the 3DS?
I am not.
Because you've owned every DS iteration. Like, if there's a new DS, the Ash for Slayer your household possesses it. That's for
sure. I bought the original, the so-called FAT, and then I got a DS Lite about a year after that came out.
Uh-huh.
And then my wife technically owns the DSi that we have.
Ask for your household. It counts.
But it's like having an offshore bank account.
Right? Yeah, basically, I use it way more than she does. But I never bought an XL.
Okay.
And, yeah, I think I'm going to hold off on the 3DS for now. Games are expensive. There's not a whole lot that's exciting yet. Although, as soon as the new 3D Mario game comes out, I might be tempted. But that's me.
It's a lot of money, $250. That's
It is a lot. It is a lot. I've managed to kind of work the Amazon trade-ins with some of my video game stuff recently. Got a little, got a cool $67 for the arcade fight stick that I traded in, which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
I think I got it for like $40, so yep. I'm ahead of the game.
You are.
Wow.
All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about Eric's fiscal discipline? Or I guess
but I'd like to invite all of you to my seminar this Saturday at the Radisson. Yes.
How to get rich in Amazon credit by buying arcade sticks and trading them.
I've got a really good entry song, and the PowerPoint presentation I'm working up is pretty kick ass. So please, everyone, come out.
Very nice. All right, Mac, how about you? What are you up to?
Let's see. Well, I haven't seen Rango yet, but I really, really want to. So maybe by next week I'll be able to report on that. But that is my number one movie to see right now. But other than that, you know, honestly, if I may turn to the world of books and get all highbrow on everybody.
Wow. Peter Games books. Maybe, Mike, you'll talk about sailing. We'll see.
Yeah. I promise I'll talk about a movie.
Okay, go ahead, Mac. What do you got for books?
All week long, I just have not been able to put down The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss, which is, of course, the sequel to Name of the Wind, which is from a few years ago. And, boy, it is so good.
Are these like fantasy novels?
Yes, they're fantasy novels, definitely high fantasy. And, you know, for years I keep hoping that someone will do something different with the whole sword and sorcery thing other than just, you know, giant battle, slay the dragon, rescue the princess. And this guy, Rothfuss, he's really doing that. You know, he's got this elaborate fantasy world, but he's telling a different type of story, but still kind of within that fantasy setting. So it's great stuff. His main character is a real badass, but one who's kind of more apt to talk his way out of trouble than to fight his way out of trouble. He almost reminds me a little bit of the guy from Justified, Raylan. Raylan was like a kind of more of an Aragorn type.
Yeah, it's true. So, let me ask you this: your quick question. Besides the obvious, like your Narnias and your Lord of the Rings, have there any been like big, like you know, popular fantasy novels? You know, set aside Golden Compass 2, whatever, that have been made into feature films or that are explored? Is that a tough genre to adapt from a book? You know,
you'd think so. Well, I suppose it's got to be expensive.
That's true. Yeah, you know what? That is a perfect theory because I agree with that completely because I've seen my share of sci-fi original fantasy movies, you know? And it's just – unless it's tongue-in-cheek, it is impossible to make something that you buy. It's because it either looks like a Renaissance fair gone off the rails, you know, or when a dragon shows up, you're just completely taken out of it. So, yeah, that's a good point. It would be it's a very cost-prohibitive venture.
Yeah, there's, you know, you can't work in the product placement there. You know, it's, you know, The right. heroic knight just can't go over to the stand in front of the Coke machine while he's
crack open a Mountain Dew, right?
yeah.
And now, did you read Game of Thrones, Mac?
I have not. That's kind of on the to-do. It's like 5 books, and they're pretty huge. So that's a real time investment.
Because that's an HBO miniseries forthcoming. So
right, and it looks really intriguing too. So I'm hoping one of these days I'll get around to it. Supposedly a whole lot of sex and violence in that series, but I don't know for sure. But yeah, this
that's what we're all about here on the Friday Filibuster.
That's sex right. Yeah, this Name of the Wind and the new one, Wise Man's Fear, it's just really, really great stuff. It's just great storytelling all around.
Nice. All right. Okay, Mike, pressure's on. You got some movie stuff to talk about?
Yeah, I saw a movie in the theaters called Adjustment Bureau.
Yes, correct, the Matt Damon movie.
Yeah, did anybody else catch that?
No.
No.
Okay. I did not. Did you guys see it?
I just talked about two video games I haven't bought yet.
That's true.
Fair enough. it was a pretty fun movie, I will say. It's a Philip K. Dick story. So, you know, like Minority Report, Blade Runner, Scanner Darkly, those sorts of things. Very much in the same vein as those things, you know, very paranoid. Matt Damon plays this guy who's this politician who meets a girl and he loses this race, this for Congress or Senate or something, and then he stumbles upon the Adjustment Bureau, which is like a group of essentially angels or bureaucrats, angelic bureaucrats who like run the world. And
they're like actual supernatural angels?
Yes. Yeah, like they have supernatural powers that all and I don't want to give too much away, but yes, they've got powers. They're, you know, they're not just normal people. They're actually, like, from a higher power.
Gotcha.
And it's very interesting, and it's very fun. It's a cool, like, it's got a lot of funny stuff to it. It's very tongue-in-cheek at times, but, you know, it's got some cool chase scenes, and it's definitely worth, you know, it's a good popcorn movie, and certainly better than Paycheck. Ben Affleck, Philip K. Dick movie. So,
all right. So thumbs up then.
Yeah. I'd say thumbs up for this movie.
Kind of a Twilight Zone kind of feel to it. The ads make it look like.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the difference, I guess, is that like they really reveal the twist and everything like halfway through the movie, and which is good. Like it's not like a twist ending type of thing. It's a like they lay out all the cards on the table and then they just let the story play out, which, but yeah, it does have definitely a Twilight Zone kind of vibe to it. And, you know, all of the Adjustment Bureau guys are dressed like 1950s ad men or something. So yeah, it's a solid movie.
All right. See, for me, a TV show that my wife kind of got me into, and we've been watching it, it's on the Science Channel. It's called An Idiot Abroad. Have you guys heard of this show?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you'd probably be familiar with it, Eric, because you like the Ricky Gervais podcast, and it's got that guy Carl, who I guess is a guest on the show. I think I'm not sure if all the time, but it's produced by Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais, and they got this friend of theirs, Carl, who's just – he's just like this oblivious guy, this idiot, but he's hilarious though. And they just send him out to see the seven wonders of the world. And so they just take this hapless British guy and just put him in these ridiculous international situations. And it really is hilarious. So I would track that down if you can. It's on our on demand. I don't know if there's a way to seek it out. It's on the Science Channel, but An Idiot Abroad. I'm just very, very, very funny.
Yeah, so this is your first introduction to Carl Pilkington, then?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, he's
Carl is a real guy. I thought Gervais and them made him up.
No, he's real.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so like
it's bizarre.
It's okay. It's okay. There are people out there saying, "Did they make Mac up?"
Yeah, that's right.
He's a real guy.
I just see him in my blog.
he just comes out with these. He just says these deadpan things, but I mean, they're just It is really funny. Like, they wanted to send him to see that city in Jordan that's built out of the rock, you know? And he was just talking about how he would rather live, like, he says, you know, why would you – he would rather live in a hole and look at the beautiful, you know, beautiful scenery of the of this palace covered in the rock than live in the palace and just looking at a hole all day. So so they said, well, we took your advice to heart, and you're going to be spending the night in a cave. You know, so they just put him in these ridiculous situations, and it's very, very funny. So if you could track that down, check it out, or, you know, if and when it hits Blu-ray DVD. Yeah, I mean, and again, my first encounter, so Eric, it's probably, you're probably familiar with this guy, but in this context, it's really great. So.
Yeah, he's bizarre. This will mean nothing to anyone except you and I, Dave, but he reminds me a little bit of if you tried to describe Tim Peavy to somebody.
Yeah, so shout out to our own college buddy, Tim Peavy.
Tim Peavy.
That's an excellent, excellent suggestion. Excellent characterizing.
Oh, him.
So, yeah, so him. Would it be great if, like, Mike and Mac knew Tim? That'd be fantastic. I'd end the podcast now about the awesome. All right, let's move on to what we've been doing for the site. Eric, go ahead.
So this week I'm reviewing Inside Job, which won Best Documentary this year, the Oscars. And it's about the what happened leading up to and since the financial meltdown in 2008. It's really good, although it should probably be called Outrage, the movie. Because I defy you to watch this movie and not leave feeling like, you know, these people deserve terrible, terrible things to happen to them. And it's so well put together and so well documented that it's not like a Michael Moore or a Morgan Spurlock kind of in your face, you know, look at this awful thing, but really I'm just kind of grandstanding. It talks about, you know, kind of leads up to what happened from the 80s onward that kind of created this environment where the financial sector could really get away with making, with a very few people making an awful lot of money, doing things that basically just kind of brought the world to its knees. And the fact that, you know, these people are not only, you know, still at it, but are still in positions of power, and that could very well happen again. So it's pretty sobering, pretty eye-opening, very, very well done. It's a movie I think everyone should see, if only to understand, you know, what's going on. Because, you know, I was, as much as I kind of followed what was happening, you know, a couple of years ago, I was not aware kind of how ingrained it all is and how prevalent it still is and how, you know, the story's not over by a long shot. So, you know, this is made by people who really want to get the message out, and I think it's a message worth hearing. So. And there's a lot of, you know, this is on Blu-ray. I don't know if the DVD is probably the same, but there's an awful lot of bonus features, like another hour of deleted interviews and stuff, and a bunch of other stuff. So it's really worth seeing. I really recommend people watch it.
All right. Very good. Mac?
Yeah, I definitely got something fun here. It's from the folks at Code Red, who are really great at unearthing all these sort of old B-movies no one's ever heard of. It's The Being. It's a nice early 80s monster movie, a real good old-fashioned creature feature. Takes place in a small town in the middle of nowhere, and a slime-covered monster is running around at night killing people, and you know it finally ends up in a big warehouse for a one-on-one showdown with the hero of the story. And it looks a little bit like the monster from Alien, but just different enough to be its own monster.
Yes, to avoid a lawsuit. Very much like my Alien versus Ninja, which I watched.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the alien there, very, very close. Tantalizingly close to the alien.
Maybe that just means that that's what aliens really look like.
Oh, maybe it does. Like that's a good point.
And Dave, you'll appreciate this, how the monster was created.
Yes.
The illegal toxic waste dumping.
Fantastic. One of my favorite all-time 80s sources of evil or sources of mutation. Love it. Love that. So The Being, huh?
The Being, yes.
You know what? I reviewed a movie called The Being at one point.
Oh, really?
The Ultimate Terror Has Taken Form, starring Martin Landau. Is that it? Same
yes,
one?
Yes, that's the same one.
Yeah, in 2005. Yeah, 2005. So, yeah. Nuclear waste. Killing spree. Nice.
Very cool.
The Being is a cautionary tale warning of the results of tampering with nature and how if you dump toxic waste into rivers, you would get your head ripped off by a slimy, one-eyed, anthropomorphic bratwurst. So does that sound accurate?
That's very accurate.
What'd you give it? Have you graded it? Have you judged it yet?
Off the top of my head.
What would you give it if you just had a gut grade?
Somewhere between, a 75 and an 80.
I gave it an 80. Fun beam.
You know, the working title for the movie was Easter Sunday. Because they were trying to cash in on the holiday-themed horror movies at the time, you know. Friday the 13th, Halloween, April Fool's Day, My Bloody Valentine, all those.
Nice.
And so there's a whole stretch of the movie that takes place at Easter where the little kids are on their Easter egg hunt and
that's
killed by the monster. So.
That doesn't work. Nice.
Just imagine if things had been different. Easter Sunday. Now, you know, there'd be the big budget remake of Easter Sunday after 7 sequels.
Nice. All right. Look forward to that. Mike, how about you?
Well, last week, if you missed it, my review of The Walking Dead hit the site. And this week I decided to up the ante and review Moonstruck with Cher and Nicolas Cage.
you're really typecasting yourself there, Mike.
I know. I feel like I have a niche reviewing things for the site, and it happens to be zombies. Moonstruck finally got that Blu-ray release that everyone was clamoring
That's
for.
That's right. And it wasn't in 3D. They didn't give it a 3D treatment.
No director's cut either. You know what, though? I got to say, it's a well-written movie. It's a very well-written romantic comedy.
I actually do recall watching it a long-ass time ago and liking it, even for being a young whippersnapper. So
it is. No, it is a good movie. I mean, it's got, to me, it's you know, watching it now, I'm sort of like, oh, I could see a lot of similarities with Big Fat Greek Wedding in terms of how it takes a cultural stereotyped, you know, like here's the Italian Americans and it just puts them all together and how crazy they are. But being an Italian American, I can relate and appreciate it. And although I'm not as crazy as any of those people, and I really do feel that watching it again, like the weak link feels like Nicolas Cage.
That's impossible.
And like I know it's blasphemy to say that he's ever.
How could he ever be the weak link?
How could he ever be the weak link? I mean, they even like gave him a prosthetic hand in this movie to help him out acting wise, but. He's pretty good when he's like screaming as usual, but like anytime he has to say a line below, you know, a level 10 intensity, it just comes off as like wooden. And, it's still a really great romantic comedy. So, this is the first time, and I'm sure you guys have experienced this too, but this is the first time on Blu-ray where like, I put in the movie, and since I'm pretty new to Blu-ray, where there isn't a menu or anything. It feels like it just
was it a Warner
playing.
Brothers? Is that a Warner Brothers one?
Oh,
like a lot of Warner Brothers just start playing, and then you have to like hit the pop menu or the top menu to navigate. Well, so
it is it's an MGM, okay. But no, there's not even a menu. Like if you want to access any special features, you have to hit this pop-up menu button, yeah. And it slides in. But there is no like physical menu. It sort of just reminded me of like the very early days of DVD when like if there was a menu, you would never see it unless you hit the menu button and it was just like a static image.
Right. It would wait to come up until after the movie was over.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, have you guys experienced that before? It seems kind of cheap.
I don't know. Did you buy like a Flony Blu-ray player?
No. I've got legit Blu-ray.
A Gamsung. No, I think I have had that happen before. A lot of Warner Brothers go that directly begin. You know, like
I just feel like Moonstruck deserves a heck of a lot better. That's
like a nice, with like meatballs slowly falling off of the screen, perhaps. We're trying to cram in every Italian stereotype we can.
Yeah, know? I mean, this doesn't even have
Marlon Brando welcoming you to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This doesn't even have, like, Blu-ray Live or anything where I could find out more information about Italians living in New York.
Welcome to the world of the jaded Blu-ray owner who was promised so many beautiful things. Yeah, Blu-ray Live that the Google search pinpoints Italians in New York. That would be great. all right, let's see. Oh, I had a Blu-ray reissue as well called The Miracle Maker, speaking of Easter, which is a long – not a long way. It's like the end of April this year, I think.
Yeah, it's like 40 days away.
40 days. How come every year it seems like Easter is further and further away? Like next year it's going to be December 24th, I have a feeling. You know?
Yet it's still going to be 40 days away.
But it's the story of Jesus, you know, story of Jesus' life, but told completely in stop-motion animation. When it's well done, it really is just someone who is just, you know, the CGI and all that has just pissed me off so much in so many different movies, just to see that kind of craft and you just know how much of a pain in the balls it was to put it together. It's pretty astounding. I mean, it's a standard issue Jesus story. So there's nothing terribly edgy. This isn't Passion of the Christ or anything, you know?
Yeah. I was about to say, what about some of the more like, you know,
Now the camera moves away from the crucifixion. No scorching. This is a family movie, but just very, you know, extraordinarily well staged. So that was kind of interesting. And then beyond that, there's a movie I reviewed called The Zombie Farm, right? And the premise sounds like it'd be a perfect tongue in cheek zombie movie, and they play it straight, which was baffling to me. It's about this voodoo priestess and her like followers, and they're converting people into zombies, and not to take over the world or anything, but just as cheap labor to work on their farm. which sounds like a perfect comedy B movie, but they just play it kind of straight. So, I mean, there's like a scene where like the investigators are watching this bus pull up to the farm and these farmhands just herding these zombies into the barn just to begin their work, you know? So, I mean,
zombies take orders in this universe?
I don't know what a zombie's going to do on a farm. I mean, I guess they could like shamble bales of hay over to places, but they're not going to milk a cow or anything. So, I don't know.
It's very close to sort of what they tried to do with Survival of the Dead, the Romero crap fest that I had to review. Where they were trying to, or the zombies like were on the island and they were just going about their chores on the farm, out of habit, or they were like, you know, but they weren't really good at it. You know, but they were trying to cure them at the same time. But you know, they were just letting them go, like try and tend to the farm. Whereas these people at least sound like they're entrepreneurs. You know,
that's right. So I give them that much.
Yeah, you got to give a little bit of credit.
All right, so that's enough of that. So Mac, what do we got? What do we got next?
Next, we are gonna move ahead and we're gonna take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. Going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're going to go to the cover art gallery for March 15th. And we're just going to talk about what's on the list here that strikes us as interesting or amusing or terrifying.
Well, there's Sharktopus.
Yes.
Which I had reviewed, so I think we talked about that. And then right underneath another movie I reviewed called Step Off. You know, like a, you know, I don't know, you know, the urban movie like, you know, what was it? What was the dance one called?
Step Up to the Streets.
Step Up to the Streets. Thank you. I forget you're a big connoisseur of that, Mike. Yes.
That's right. It's in my wheelhouse.
This one was not great. So
can Sharktopus fly? Looks like
no. Sharktopus can do a lot of things. He can go on land. He uses his tentacles to walk on land.
Oh.
I mean, he's the Sharktopus. He's very opportunistic.
Let's see, we've got The Fighter coming out.
That's right.
It's a good movie.
Well, probably my preferred Oscar, you know, contender, for sure.
I thought you were an Inception guy.
Yes, I did. I would have loved Inception to win for sure. But of the Oscar movie, you know, the quote-unquote Oscar films. That's
The Hereafter, that Clint Eastwood, Matt Damon movie.
Yeah, did you see that?
No, I didn't get a chance to, but I heard it was kind of weird.
Hey, Eric, are you back with us? We lost Eric for a second.
Oh, no.
May have. Well, I'll keep trying to ring him up. We're going to have to pick up his slack, guys. Here we go.
Okay.
Let's see here. Bob Harper, Ultimate Cardio Body, kind of looks like Joel McHale from Community. or a cross between Joel McHale and Sean William Scott.
You know, I caught a brief scene of Spider-Man 2 the other day, and Joel McHale was like a banker in it.
Really?
Yeah, he showed up like right when he's the teller that Peter and Aunt May talk to right before like Dr. Octopus busts in the bank and starts the big fight.
The toaster.
Yeah, that's Joe McHale.
Interesting. Hey Mac, what do you make of Battle of Los Angeles or Battle for Los Angeles?
It's Battle of Los Angeles.
Is this a movie from the Asylum? Let me see. Here.
Yes, it is.
Nice.
It's our the old folks at the Asylum. There's nothing they want to rip off. Is that too harsh of a term for the Asylum?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's nothing they won't take advantage of.
Now, is that a movie you'd still, the real Battle of Los Angeles, is that a movie you'd be interested in, Mac?
It could be.
Because, you know, we were talking about continuing the tradition of meeting up to watch a movie starring Michelle Rodriguez flying helicopters.
That's right.
She's flying a helicopter. Mac and I will go see that movie. Let's see. What else do we have here?
From the category of I Can't Believe This Exists, we have the Bollywood version of Hostel.
What's it called?
This is called Hostel. You know, the Eli Roth movie? This is the Bollywood version.
Oh, man.
So yeah, I wonder what the singing and dancing is going to be like in that one. And if there's going to be a big wedding in the middle of it.
Lighthouses of America. Hey, guys.
No, wait a minute. Really? Is that the same one? I reviewed Lighthouses of North America.
Oh.
This is a two-disc set.
I've been waiting for the sequel forever, so I'm so happy.
I couldn't tell if you were legitimately excited or...
Well, that's all that review is. I think that review made it into my, like... Remember we did the judges' top 10, like our 10 favorite reviews or something ago? Yeah. I think that one, I included that one in mine, so there you go. That's how important Lighthouses of North America was to me. All right, anything else? Going once, going twice, all right. Lots to choose from, a bunch of different things going on, a few blockbusters, lots of documentaries, so feel free to purchase through this page and support DVD Verdict. Okay, inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Okay, Mac, what do you got?
I'll go with Thunder in the City.
Oh, nice.
And it's a tagline, flaming with punch-packed excitement.
That sounds pretty awful. That's pretty terrible. All right, Mike?
Extraordinary Birds.
Like birds as in the late, when the reference to ladies, right? Like how the British, look at that beautiful bird. Right?
Exactly. These are extraordinary birds.
You know, I will have to say that this is a tough week for inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD releases. Maybe the studios are onto us. Is that possible? Because the best I got is Snoop Sisters, which looks anti-erotic when you see it for sure, you know. All right. Well,
you could have just gone ahead with Pokemon.
Pokemon, of course. That's true. All right. Well, we definitely have lost Eric, so I hope Watkins Glen wasn't nuked, you know, by North Korea or anything. So he's cut out on us. So hopefully we'll be able to bring him back later. So let's just move on to ambush topics, where we've got random topics to throw at each other. You know how it works. I will go first, gentlemen. Wacky, shocking, weirdo moments in otherwise fairly grounded films.
Wow.
The first one that springs to mind is like a real highbrow kind of one.
Go for it. Do it.
It's a Hitchcock's Spellbound. which is just like, you know, your basic, you know, thriller murder mystery stuff. But then you have the dream sequences, which were designed by Salvador Dali. And they're all messed up and twisted with the dripping clocks and all that. So, cool movie, but just perhaps a little incongruous, perhaps, maybe a little.
All right.
Of course, Salvador Dali would probably want to be incongruous, so there you go.
Oh, and Eric, you're back with us?
Yeah, I'm back.
Good. Well, that's good. We were afraid that your hometown got nuked by North Korea, so you're with us. And we just started Ambush Topics. And we'll get you rolling. Mac went first. My topic was first. Mac just wrapped it up, and it's crazy, wacko, insane moments in otherwise grounded movies. So Mike or Eric, you're up, whatever.
All right, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. No, I was hoping you were going to take the reins there. Because I only watch wacko movies.
Okay, well, how about a surprisingly grounded moment in a wacko movie? Like they break out into a discussion of deficit spending or something in the middle of a trauma movie. How about that?
I want to say that there's like – maybe I'm not thinking of it right. Like there has to be many times in action movies where like I feel like it's ridiculous for a character to inflate to the point of explosion, but it happens all the time.
Are you referencing Live or Let Die, one of our favorite ridiculous bad movie? Bad Guy Deaths? That's another one. Big Trouble in Little China. Well, that wasn't really a grounded movie, was it?
No. But like, okay, yeah, like Live and Let Die is a fairly grounded movie.
I think that works. I think that's I will.
Like, but, and I know it's happened in other films too, mainly like in the 80s or like, just where a character gets somehow inflated and then explodes. And I just.
Live and Let Die is definitely the greatest example of that.
Right.
Yes.
And they did it for the Bond's one-liner at the end.
And that is a movie that was largely played it straight, you know? So that happened was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I feel like most Bond movies kind of play it straight, and then some of them take a turn for the worst in terms of ridiculousness.
Yeah, that one was the worst, though.
That one is up there.
All right, Eric, you got anything? You've been truly ambushed because you were dropped.
I have. I was trying to...
Called back and ambushed.
Boy, ambushed. I'm trying to think of some movie where there's just an abrupt, like, violent death or something like that where it just kind of comes out of nowhere. And I'm having a tough time
thinking
of one. Yeah, but I don't know if that's really grounded and it kind of makes sense. Maybe some just like where like the screenwriter just didn't know what to do, so he just decided to kill off somebody. But
how about an episode of Elf, perhaps?
Probably an episode of Elf.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar coaching the 3-on-3 tournament in Full House, 3-on-3 basketball tournament.
It's also not grounded. I guess this isn't really grounded, and it's been I think I saw this movie once. I remember hearing. This is kind of primarily from the discussion they had about it on F This Movie a long time ago. But apparently in Showgirls is a rather unwarranted and unearned rape scene.
Oh.
So we'll go with that. It's, you know.
Okay, and I've seen Showgirls, and I can't recall that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's really, ugly.
Yeah, that's kind of a shocking. Is it wacko? Yeah, it's wacko. Cause,
yeah, that's a good invert. Yeah, because that works. All right, so I guess this was a tougher topic. I only thought of it because I recently just watched some of this movie, but in Conan the Barbarian, a great movie, but I just love how out of nowhere James Earl Jones turns into a giant snake. You know, like we were not privy to this power really. So you know, everyone's having their fun orgy, you know, whatever, and then all of a sudden, James Earl Jones turns into a giant snake and he slithers off. And it's like, oh, okay, that power may have been helpful before he got his head chopped off by Conan at the end. No.
Well, on the commentary, they talk about that. They say that they wanted to leave it mysterious on purpose.
It was mysterious. That's true. It really just made little. It made maybe a little more sense than Conan's girlfriend coming back as like a heavenly night angel. You know, that was pretty weird too. But hey, Crom works in mysterious ways, right, boys? All right. Continuing on. Mac, what do you have?
All right. Half human, half fish.
Okay.
I guess Daryl Hannah and Splash.
There
I
you
guess.
Go. He does. He goes with it. Nice. Well, isn't what's his face from Hellboy? Isn't he half fish, half
fish? Oh, yeah.
Abe Sapien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Abe Sapien, yeah. All right, that leaves you, Mike.
Yeah. Isn't there a isn't there someone in Big Fish? Or is it just a big fish?
Is there a mermaid?
Isn't there a mermaid character in Big Fish?
A mermaid. I don't remember. Wow.
Then yes, there was.
Oh, okay then.
Okay. Mac, let's hear your happy pet fish.
Mine, boy, I'm really bringing up all the old movies tonight. I went with one of my all-time favorites, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
There you go.
Thinking about the Oscars, there's an old legend around Hollywood where the producers were trying to come up with a new movie monster. And one of them, one producer pointed to the Oscar sitting on his desk and said, "Make it look like that, but with gills." And then the special effects people, they took the Oscar award and used it as the base to create the design of the monster. And that's how I got the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Very nice.
That doesn't quite sound right. I mean, I don't know much about the Oscars, but I don't think the Oscar has gill. Not gill, but just like scales and stuff. It's a pretty...
That's
or
like
webbed hands. It's basically like saying, you know, here's a picture of a guy, go make a dragon. Or I don't know, it just seems...
Well, maybe the Oscars had a different design back in the 50s.
Maybe they were way cooler.
They were more lurching.
Back when they had claws and webbed hands.
All right, Eric, what do you got?
Okay, so this is inspired by actually your the movie you mentioned earlier, that stop motion animation one.
Yes.
Awesome stop motion animation.
Awesome stop motion animation. All right. I'll just go with the Big Daddy, which is King Kong, and then a specific sequence which I still love to this day is just when he wrecks that Tyrannosaurus Rex, rips his jaw open. I mean, that's some violent stuff, and just amazing how they capture that with some puppets. Love it.
I'm gonna go with the an episode, like one of the first episodes of Mad TV.
Man, we've gone our entirety of the Friday Filibus without mentioning Mad TV.
I know, right? It stuck with me ever since then. It was like their Christmas. It was around Christmas or something, and it was their stop motion parody of like the, those classic. I don't remember what they're called, but the classic.
Rankin Bass.
The Rankin Bass ones, and somebody goes on like a kill. One of the elf goes on like a killing spree and shoots everybody up and everything. And it wasn't exceptional stop motion animation, but it was, it has stuck with me ever since.
Yeah. I think that's one of the only sketches I remember from that show too. And it was basically just Martin Scorsese's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yes. So it's a shame.
Yeah. So they had like one of the elves, like, you know, put the other elf's head in a vice.
That's right. And, yeah. There's a lot of torture.
Like shooting through the eyeball.
It's a shame that that show peaked within like its first episode.
Yeah.
But it did.
That's right. All right.
Let's see.
Mac, you got something.
Wait, I don't know. I have a whole bunch of favorites. I mean, you know, you got your Wallace and Gromit, you got Nightmare Before Christmas, you got Coraline.
What are you trying to take, Eric's?
Yeah, please name all. Yeah. What else is there, Mac? What else?
You can take any one of those. Those are freebies. I'll go with Coraline because I really love the movie. The mouse circus scene in Coraline is just like stop motion, just taken to the extreme with all kinds of moving parts and craziness going on all at once. Definitely a really, really cool scene in a cool movie.
All right, Eric, which was yours? What were you thinking?
This is a movie that I loved as a kid and haven't seen in years, but I really want to track down again. But The Adventures of Mark Twain. You guys ever watch that?
Yeah, I've seen that. That movie's messed up.
It is. It was awesome. I watched that all the time, which is probably explains a lot. But yeah, it's a stop motion animated film that basically kind of mashes up a lot of Mark Twain's stories. The kind of the basic gist is that Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn, and what's her name? The girl, Becky Thatcher, exists in the same world as the actual Mark Twain, and Mark Twain has built this this sort of giant Zeppelin balloon thing that he's going to fly to Halley's Comet because he came in with Halley's Comet. He's going to go out, and they stow away on board, and they go along with him on this adventure, and they go to all these kind of weird and crazy places, and he tells them stories. You know, they have like the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County and the story of Adam and Eve as told by Mark Twain, all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I'm hoping that my memories, you know, are true to that, but yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah, they meet the devil at one point.
The devil is all like, yeah.
And it builds a city out of sand and then destroys it, and all the little sand people are all suffering. It's just
yeah, like, that was apparently a scene that they cut out, or it wasn't like that. I think I saw it. They used to air it on the Disney Channel, I think, when I was a kid. Either that or they aired it once and I recorded it and just watched it over and over again. But yeah, that was a scene I hadn't seen until, you know, it showed up on YouTube a few years back. Yeah, no, so Dave, Mike, you guys never saw it?
Maybe a long time ago. I mean, there's, I don't know, I got nothing. I'm trying to reach into the recesses of my brain. The Frog of Calaveras County sounds familiar. It's something I may have watched, but I'm not sure if it's the same thing.
Yeah, it was done by Will Vinton, who did the California Raisin, so it was that kind of style.
Mm. Yeah, I just can't recall. Maybe I just shoved it down in my subconscious. That's the best I can do.
Yeah, it's possible.
All right, Mike, finish us off.
All right. Well, in honor of Lent kicking into action and a little cross-promotion, I listened to your Objection podcast. So this
week, we talked about Constantine, correct?
That's right. That's right. So confessional scenes.
Ooh, go right away. Probably something hilarious. Well, probably one of the funniest moments in Seinfeld. It's the episode where Jerry is very concerned that Dr. Whatley converted to Judaism strictly for the jokes. So he goes into confessional to talk to the priest about it, and it's just a hilarious sequence where he sits on the kneeler, you know, and even the priest has got full of jokes, and then it ends perfectly, you know, with George just sticking his head and really like, Jerry, I really need to talk to you. You know, how did he know he was in the confession? Again, obviously – I suck telling about it, but it's hilarious. So, a great sequence and a great episode.
There's a really funny bit in the movie The Commitments, which is a great, great movie. As mm-hmm. It's one of those movies you can just sit down and watch anytime. And it takes place in Ireland, and the one devout Catholic guy goes into his confessional, and you know he says, you know, oh Father, you know, forgive me, I've sinned. I've joined a rock and roll band, and when I'm alone by myself, instead of singing hymns to myself, I'm singing When a Man Loves a Woman by Marvin Gaye. And then the priest, you hear his voice from the other edge saying, it was Percy Sledge sung that particular lyric, my child.
Nice vocal work there.
Yeah, wow.
There was an episode of it must have been Tales from the Crypt, because I remember seeing it not that long ago. Dave, you can confirm it or deny. There's some sort of serialized show where a man is convinced that his wife is having an affair with their priest because she's always going to church.
Okay. Yeah.
And he becomes convinced of it and hires a hitman to take out the priest.
I'm trying to remember the twist though. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think then he basically puts on the little white collar and goes into the confessional to hear his wife's confession because he's sure that's where going down, and she confesses that she's I forget what she confesses, but turns out obviously they're not having an affair. Right. He's thrilled. They both go out of the confessional. They're hugging,
And the hitman
comes in. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
that's so. Right. I gotcha.
Bum bum bum.
But
oh, spoiler alert.
That was that from like 1987 or something.
Probably.
One dude never got around to watching it. Well, my initial one was the obvious, very obvious one, which is the Hitchcock movie I Confess, where a priest knows about a man who's a murderer, and I believe the priest is accused of committing the murder, but he also knows he heard the confession of the murderer, but he can't say anything about it. And it's pretty awesome. But I also just started thinking about like how superhero movies and action movies use like the confessional as like this tool. Like Daredevil, I think, with Ben Affleck, he like lives in a church.
Right.
If you remember that,
there's not much I choose to remember about that movie. Yeah, I well,
remember yeah, that.
Things out there all the time. Yeah.
That's right. And then Hulu, and it hasn't started yet, I don't think, but pretty soon, Kiefer Sutherland's doing like a 5-part miniseries on Hulu called The Confession.
Is it going to be working on the 24 feature film instead?
I don't know. Well, this one sounds pretty awesome.
Oh, okay.
He's a hitman.
Okay, not okay. You had me a hitman. There you go.
Yeah, he's a hitman who's debating the ethics of killing, of like assassination, basically, with John Hurt, I think, as a priest. And then I don't know. There's a trailer for it on Hulu that looks pretty awesome. Because they're not just sitting in the booth the whole time. He's actually like doing stuff as like an assassin. So, cool. Yeah. So. And of course, to bring it back around to what I started today with, that would be there's a great confessional scene in Moonstruck.
Yeah.
And way to bring it back to Moonstruck and Cher, as most of these Friday filibusters should do going forward. So
yeah, just trying to raise the class of this.
And Cher raises the class of anything. So appreciate that.
Yep. I don't know. If I could turn back time, I'd make you not make that joke.
Oh man,
that's a share thing, right?
Can we make Eric's internet go off again?
That's right. Well, at the very least, Michael has got an easy image to put up on the Friday filibuster page on Friday. Share. I just hope it's not the one where she's wearing that nightmarish outfit like, for that video. I think it's a turn back time.
Yeah, like the uncovered butt on the aircraft carrier one.
Yes. That is not a good look. That's not a good look. So, well, anyway, that is it for this edition of the Friday Filibuster. So, if you tuned out before we started talking about Cher bearing herself, then kudos to you. That's all I'll say. So, thank you to Eric, Mac, and Mike. As always, Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email. Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster is our Facebook page. So, Mac, what do you got?
Good evening.